Talking about
Star Wars.
All the way.
Go look that up, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So
William Murray. Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 228, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And we are here with a regular old episode, just the three of us chatting about life and the things that go on during it and the challenges that we all face.
Is that what this show is about?
It sounds a lot more existential than what we have in our show notes.
Yeah.
Is that not, I thought it was about the challenges of life. That's not what we're doing this week.
No.
This is video games and shit.
Oh, right. Okay.
We talk about video games and
that's
and
my
actually,
other podcast.
Movies and TV.
Our mantra is to not talk about serious things.
Oh, right, right. My other podcast is rated Positivity, and it's all about how to positively overcome life's challenges.
This is like the 1 hour a week where we don't have to talk about stuff like that.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So we
I
set
would
aside
to your other podcast, though, if you really did it.
Would you?
Yeah, I would. I'm
you don't hear enough of me talking on a day-to-day basis.
I'm down. I listen to some really shitty podcasts. I really need some new ones, some new variety.
We'll spin. I got no transition.
No offense.
This week's episode is brought to you by Luke Quate. Luke Quate.
Is it like a loot quake?
Loot crate.
Oh, okay.
And this theme for April is Quest, which I think you should still have a couple weeks to get in on the April's theme. Sometimes life's little adventures turn into big sweeping epics. We salute Jesus. My English has
salute
not come
Jesus.
Together today.
Let's sort of anyway.
We salute these often unexpected journeys with April's theme Quest. Harry Potter, Labyrinth, Vikings, Uncharted 4, and a bunch of other things. The monthly t-shirt and loot pin is joined by four more exclusives. Subscribe by 4:19 at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
You guys want
to get it, go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA to get 10% off your subscription and help out the podcast. And let's hear Ash's theory.
I have a theory. So okay. I've been lucky enough to go to the Vikings press room a couple times at Comic-Con, and they give away these Vikings drinking horns.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that one of these drinking horns might be in this crate. Because Loot Crate's dropped a couple hints, and I just have an idea that they're going to repurpose these and make them Loot Crate exclusives, because they're awesome. They're really, really cool. So if you like Vikings and you want to drink out of a big-ass horn, lootcrate.com/ratedNA.
Awesome.
There you go.
There you go.
Let's do the rundown.
Okay, so this week we're going to talk about what we've been up to, of course. We have some news about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. What is this, a TV show called Preacher?
Based off the comic.
Hey-o! And then there's some new content coming to The Division very soon, a free update, if I'm not mistaken. And then we will talk a little bit about The Force Awakens, which came to digital on Friday, and by the time you hear this, it will be out on Blu-ray as well, and something called a DVD. Mm-hmm. And then in our Nequato, we ask you, what is your worst fear, and would you subject yourself to it in virtual reality?
You know what we're not going to talk about is what? April Fool's bullshit.
No, I don't care about that at all.
I hate April Fool's Day so much. It was like the night before, and I leaned over to my wife, and I'm like, no April Fool's shit this year, right? And she's like, no. Like,
yeah,
thank you.
Just turn off the internet.
My main complaint with it is when legitimate news outlets run fake stories.
Yeah,
and then
when they're questionable too, and you're like, oh, do I bother trying to find out if this is real or not?
Doesn't that go against? I get they want to have fun and they're trying to take part in a goofy holiday, but like at the same time, you're like, isn't your whole thing that like we should always trust you as a source and not? I don't know. It's
yeah, I think it needs to be painfully obvious that that's what you're doing if you're a respected, trusted news outlet.
and we sound like such cranky bastards right now, but
we've also dealt with it a lot for so many years,
you know, as we read the news quite a lot for our jobs and such, and it's annoying as hell to have a day where you're like, I can't tell if this is real or not, and it's not funny. Sometimes it's funny, I guess.
Well, the other, you know, the flip side of it is that, you know, the we follow a lot of entertainment companies, obviously, and occasionally these companies will announce things that I would actually want to have, you know. So one year, Think Geek announced a like singing bass, but of Admiral Akbar.
Yeah.
And it's still on their website as an April Fool's joke. And I want one.
You keep clicking purchase and nothing happens.
And they're like, sorry, it's a joke. It's like, well, make the damn thing because I'll buy one. And then, you know, Don't Nod. Their April Fool's joke was like a mixtape, a cassette tape for Life is Strange. I saw that.
Yeah.
And everybody really was like, everybody was like, yeah, you should actually do that because we would buy that because it's 2016 and the 90s are back. So let me get that cassette tape.
Yeah.
Anyways, Ash, why don't you let us know what you're doing since you were, since you were going on your war on April Fool's Day.
Yeah. Fuck. Fuck that April Fool. I'm gonna punch him in the butt. Wow. No, I happily downloaded The Force Awakens digitally and watched all the bonus features and rewatched the movie again with my wife. And that was super fun. It was really cool to sit down on the couch and just kind of be able to talk through the movie.
Yes.
And, you know, like, and relax through it. Because actually, I went and saw it 3 times in the theater. But it was cool to watch it again and, you know, pick up on all the little things that I missed. And having it digitally is cool too, because it means, like, you know, I can just kind of keep it there on the hard drive and play it whenever I want to. And
yeah,
I don't know.
I downloaded it to every single device that I had that allowed me to download it.
Yeah, this is because you know you're going to watch it a bunch. It's absolutely just a great thing to have on in the background. And I don't know. I kind of had this epiphany where I was like, you know what? Like, I have a lot of old DVDs, like hundreds of old DVDs, and there's some I want to keep, but I think I want to get rid of most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just hold on to the stuff that I really care about, and get the rest of the stuff digitally.
Same.
I mean, I'll buy a lot of, you know, the Blu-rays for the franchises that I truly care about.
Yes.
But for the most part, it's like, God, I have, guys, it's just crates upon crates of DVDs. It's absurd. So I think it's time to say goodbye.
You could open up your own Blockbuster Video.
Yeah, or just, you know, go to the flea market and wear a funny hat and sell all my old DVDs. Be like, why do you have all these shitty old horror movies? I'm like, I don't know, I like them.
Hey, I saw that. It's VHS tapes. I saw something on the news that, like, some weird cult movie VHS tapes are worth like thousands of dollars now.
Oh, I just threw away a bunch of those, so let's hope not.
Okay, well, I won't tell you what they were because I thought you may have had one of them, so I won't.
There's a likelihood that I may have, but I literally just threw them away this past summer.
All right, well then forget I ever said anything.
Is Hook on that list? Because I have been forced to carry around an old Hook VHS tape for 7 years of my life so far.
Think it's on the list, no.
Okay, so Hook's not worth $1,000 is no, what you're saying?
Hook is not.
Oh, now you got to tell me what this valuable VHS is. It's going to kill me.
I think it was one of the, like, you know, like the Evil Dead, one of those, something in that series.
Shit.
Which I assume that you would have had.
I probably did.
Yeah.
Damn it.
So don't worry about it. It's cool.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Other than that, go dumpster diving
until you find it.
Yeah. I actually do know my way around the landfill pretty well. We'll talk about that another day.
Wow.
I picked up Rise of the Tomb Raider.
That's awesome.
Which I've been meaning to get for a really long time. And I remember reading a lot of stuff about it when it came out. And, you know, apparently
it come out against something huge. And
Fallout 4.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. I was like, it came out Fallout the same 4, day as something gigantic.
Which
right?
is so unfortunate because I've only played maybe an hour and a half. And it is an absolutely gorgeous experience. And it really makes me miss cinematics and games with like a coherent narrative.
Yeah.
And
how about that?
It has a linear experience. And I was like, oh my God. And same thing, I was playing through the remastered version of Gears of War. And I was thinking the same thing as I was playing it. I was like, oh my God. Like, there's a narrative and I'm going from point A to point B and I'm doing stuff along the way. And the mm-hmm. story is actually progressing. So,
if you didn't dislike Sean Ashmore so much, I could recommend to you something for you for this week, but
I don't think he's a good Iceman. Sorry, man.
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I played Rise of the Tomb Raider, not far enough to officially review it yet, but it is absolutely stunning. And, you know, in the first couple minutes, it tackles a lot of crazy fears that I have. So like heights and things like that. So we'll talk about that when we talk about our question of the week. But
cool.
You know, if you haven't picked it up yet, I definitely say go for it. There's new DLC that came out this week as well, like a survival mode type thing with monsters and such. So definitely check that out. And I've been playing The Division with you guys a couple nights a week, and we are progressing. I think we're level 17 to 20. Yeah, 20 right now. Around there. So
yeah.
So yeah. So it's fun. I guess we'll talk more about our Division adventures a little bit later, but we've been having some fun with it. Scott and I had some fucking insanity last night, which was great.
So. Yeah, we can talk about that a little bit for
Me
sure.
Me too. But I'm not going to talk about it on the podcast.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Let's toss on over to Matt and see what he's been up to.
Sure.
Hello. Wow.
I had some coffee and it's been caught weird in my throat all morning. Yeah, so some Division. Did some of that with you guys and solo as well. And threw on Star Wars. I also got Star Wars immediately. I have some qualms with digital, but
are they technical qualms?
I don't believe that if you buy a thing full price digitally that it should be DRM'd. It's like a shitty way to treat customers, and I don't really understand why it's okay with video. Like, we're just all cool with it because you're technically not buying it. You've basically just leased the movie from Xbox or Amazon. Yeah. Like Amazon, I think even has wording that says like, hey, at any point we could pull this license, and if we do, you no longer have that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
Which is weird to me. It's just like, if that's the case, then it shouldn't cost, you know, $20 or whatever they charge for the movie. It should be significantly cheaper, like just above like double rental cost or something like that, you know?
Yeah, but you're stuck in that weird place with a Star Wars movie because you can buy the Blu-ray now, but you know in 7 years there's going to be a 3-film new trilogy collection and a 9-film, you know, complete saga collection.
That's kind of my other worry is like, how many times am I going to buy this thing? Like, because I know that if I buy it digitally and then I buy the Blu-ray and then buy the, you know, like it's just, it feels like I'm just going to keep, but like you said, there's going to be different series. Like, I've stopped buying the Marvel movies. I only buy the special collector's edition comes out, and I just wait for that to come out and then buy it then, because it's like, I just don't, it's fine. I'll survive.
I still have a, what do they call it? A special collector's edition version of Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, on VHS.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it comes with a little film snippet, you know, that was part of the special features, and a little lithograph art book thing.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I was excited at the time. I remember this because
weren't you working at?
I was like working at a record store, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And I was really excited because I thought my film piece was going to have something cool in it. And it was just kind of like a very zoomed out shot of the lightsaber fight at the end. So all you can really see.
It was all CG, so there was just nothing in it.
Yeah, all you could really see was that area where they were battling, you know, with, you know, it looked like the inside of a ventilation shaft or whatever that was.
Yeah. What if it was just a piece of like green screen?
That would have been more exciting, I think.
So that's my minor qualm is that, like, I understand DRMing streaming services like Netflix and stuff because you're not actually buying the movies. You're buying the right to watch Netflix at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand selling and renting movies and DRMing them. Like, that all makes sense to me. And even selling movies, like, it just is weird that you're DRM to a service. It is weird to me.
Yeah, I had these films that before, you know, this streaming thing caught on, the films originally let you download a file of the movie.
Right.
And I guess since I've updated this machine to Windows 10 or something like that, those files don't even work anymore. And then the server that they're trying to validate the DRM against
is gone.
Apparently is gone too. So
And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just like, it's weird that you've spent money on a thing and then you technically just don't, it's just not yours. Like, you don't own it.
And I don't know if I'm right with this, but I don't feel like I actually downloaded anything. Do you just stream shit now when you buy it digitally?
On Xbox One, you actually cannot download the movies that you buy. You can download them to the Xbox 360. You know, if you bought the film on, it's Disney, so you get the Disney Movies Anywhere. So if you bought it on Xbox and it's connected to Amazon, you could go on your, you know, iPad, Apple device, download it through the Amazon app, but you just can't download it on Xbox. It's such a weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And before you sell streaming, but before you sell all your DVDs, Ash.
Yeah.
I can help you set up a little digital server that's like super easy to do, and yes. then you could rip all your DVDs and then have them all forever
for backup wanted. Purposes, of course.
For backup purposes, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's totally
technically
legal,
it's
right?
only illegal. It's only illegal to rebroadcast or distribute that movie. You can rip it all day long if you want. And
I do that want. Every day.
So the weird thing I was going to say I've been doing, which I don't think I talked to you guys about, I got a weird bug up my butt, and it was to nobody. Okay,
yeah, I'm just letting you go with that.
It was to watch the X-Men movies in chronological order.
Oh boy.
Oh, Bobby.
How do they hold up?
they don't. Chronologically, X-Men Origins Wolverine, and then First Class, and then X-1, 2, and 3, then Wolverine, then Days of Future Past. I've made it through the first three, I've made it through Origins, First Class, and then the first Singer movie.
Which one of those is your favorite? Because I think
First Class, easily.
Really? I liked First Class. I also liked number two.
Yeah. When is the last time you've watched number two?
That's the one with Stryker, right? That guy?
Yeah.
It's been a while, but I remember liking it. It was okay.
I don't think you're going to like it as much as you used to.
Yeah.
It's really weird. It's as if Bryan Singer just hates the source material.
I see.
Like, I now remember why Iron Man was such a revelation at the time that it came out. And it was because it was like, oh, we have decades upon decades of source material. What if we just made a movie based off of that and made it fun and engaging? The X-Men movies are like, what if we just threw out all the comic books and we mention the characters and kind of briefly show them having powers and then just tell whatever story we feel like telling around it? You know, like...
Sure.
It's really weird. It's just it just comes off odd. And it's not even that they're like poorly acted or anything like that. I still think Hugh Jackman's he's a great Wolverine, and you know, for the most part a bunch of them are great, but it's just weird. It's literally like Singer just fucking hates the X-Men. And then talk about Gavin Hood in that X-Men Origins movie. I don't know what the hell happened there. That was like Ryan and I were talking about it, and I think it was Hugh Jackman's productions company's like first movie ever the Origins movie. And like the effects are weird in it. Like everything is just as if they were like, I don't even get it. Cause at the time it still made a ton of money. It made like $370 million or something insane.
And it has snippets of awesome stuff. Like the intro where it's showing him through time, I think is great.
Yeah. Where he's like going through the different war scenes with.
Right. That was great. And then when it gets to the actual film, it kind of falls apart.
Also, like, Liev Schreiber as Sabretooth is that's a weird casting choice, I feel like.
Yeah, he's a great actor, but I don't see him as Sabretooth, right?
No.
And I definitely don't see Tyler Mane as Sabretooth either.
No.
The guy
no.
from the original X-Men.
Yeah. It's just really oddly paced. It's interesting also, what's really fun about watching it in chronological order is that it doesn't matter whatsoever, because every movie like could give a shit about every other movie that came before it or around it. So
yeah,
like X2 is I haven't started it yet, but while it picks up sort of where X1 left off, it also doesn't kind of give a shit about the story that was told in X1 either. Mm-hmm. And then X3 like sends that shit straight down the toilet, and then Days of Future Past erases X3, and then like all the Wolverine movies, you're like, where is this supposed to be taking place in time? Because seemingly no one is aware of the... In Origins, I bet you guys don't even remember this. You've probably removed this from your brain. In Origins, all of the X-Men are in it, and at the very end of the movie... Professor X shows up and takes them away in a helicopter to the X school.
I do not remember that.
yeah, that happened. So like the Ice Queen and Scott Summers and Quicksilver, and they're all there. They're all in the movie. They show them all leave together, and then Patrick Stewart shows up at the end. He's like, "Get on my helicopter, let's go!" And then they all get on a helicopter and fly seemingly to the school.
Hmm.
Weird.
And it's like the years don't match up, the ages don't match up, and then it's like, if this is the case, why do they all not know each other? And then they erase Wolverine's memory at the end so that he apparently can't remember, like, when he gets picked up by the school. Like, it is just so baffling how little, like, it really makes you marvel, no, bad pun, marvel at what Marvel did.
Right.
Because they built this cohesive universe, like, across multiple mediums that all make sense, and you can watch the TV shows or watch the movies, and, like, they all work together and they make sense together. And,
yeah,
like,
and they care about each other.
They care. Yeah, they literally care. The biggest question that always happens in the Marvel movies is, like, well, why didn't Thor just show up and take care of everything for, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever? And you're like, well, I mean, that's the thing that I'm like, who gives a shit? Like, they don't do that in the comics either. They don't, like, that would ruin everything if they're like, oh, Thor's here. Yeah.
He's got his own shit to do. You know, yeah. He can't just keep calling him up on the phone.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's painful for the most part, but it was an interesting, like, theory to, like, walk through these movies. And because I haven't watched some of them in so long, and, you know, I watched Days of Future Past and I don't like it. Like, I really didn't like that movie at all. But at the same time, I'm like, well, maybe it's just because I'm viewing it through the wrong, like, lens, you know?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, nope, it's just not that good.
Did you watch the Rogue cut of the film?
I have not seen that yet.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, it's a shame because the characters are great. And, you know, we were talking about this last week when we were talking about what we would like to see on Netflix, you know, what
property. I think that's what sparked me. God, I am just not, English is no longer, it's gone today. I think that's what pushed me into doing this was you talking about that. And I was like,
yeah,
well, maybe it does work, though. Let me rewatch. And I'm like, it doesn't work.
No, it's a shame, though, because, I mean, it's such a cool cast of characters. But it's,
yeah.
I don't know, it's been kind of shredded.
It's weird that, like, you could see in First Class the sort of, like, beginnings of somebody giving a shit about the X-Men and the team and kind of the narrative of this group together, because you watch that movie and it's like, oh, this sort of makes sense. And it's like, I think it's mostly just because it was directed by somebody who cares, because it was directed by what's his name from Kick-Ass and Kingsman,
Vaughn.
Yeah, Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah,
and it's like, you see that and you're like, oh, it seems like he cares about the source material, you know, because First Class actually does mirror the short run of First Class comics that was done on X-Men a little bit, at least. So, you know, with the exception of some of the characters, I think they can't use, like, Wolverine's hard for them to,
right,
you know, place.
Well, I mean, I think I'm no huge fan of those movies anymore. Yeah. But I think when they first came out, I remember being really excited and really enjoying it a lot because we really hadn't had a good superhero movie.
Right.
And yeah. I want to say Bryan Singer's X-Men, you know, was the first good superhero movie. And I think
it was, yeah.
He was really afraid that not only would people not appreciate the source material, but that he ended up having to change things, I think, to appeal to, or at least he thought, to appeal to a wider audience. So he dressed them all in black leather and modernized them a bit and yeah, changed up the relationships a lot. To the point where, you know, I'm sure the studio was saying, like, look, like, you can't have them running around in spandex. You can't have them, you know, being younger. They have to be cool and edgy and, like, you know, appeal to this, and this. So I think a lot of those changes were at the studio level. But at the same point, you're absolutely right. Like, at this point, you know, it's hard to go back and watch them when the Marvel Cinematic Universe is doing it so well.
Yeah. Or even, honestly, like, the DC TV shows. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
That other than Gotham, any non-Fox property maybe it's just Fox. Maybe Fox just hates source material.
Oh, man.
Ryan was running me through stuff that's happening on Gotham right now, and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, what are they doing? Like, Jim Gordon's in jail or something. He murdered a guy. I don't understand any
Scott
of it.
Scott loves that show.
I find it enjoyable. But again, I don't read the comics.
I quit with Balloon Man.
I think that's where I quit too.
I mean, in my opinion, it gets much better after the first season, but again, I don't read the comics, so I don't really know. I don't have that, you know, to compare it against.
But it doesn't need to be the comics exactly. It's just like, you know, taking the most basic thing, like what's going on with Jim Gordon, let's say, right? Like, he is the moral center of Gotham. Like, that's his whole point, is that, like, he's the guy who's always on watch and kind of, like, so to make him, like, possibly, I guess, or definitely a murderer and put him in jail is like a weird, it's a weird way to take a line of stories that has existed for decades.
On this show, he's sort of a gray character, even though he, right. even though, you know, the public perceives him as sort of the white knight, you know, yeah. in the show. And he acts that way as well, but he's not always that way.
It's just very odd. I feel like the notion of what Gotham could have been and what it became was just different than I expected. I was kind of hoping like an actual tale about the city, and Bruce Wayne would just be kind of there as a young kid, and you'd be seeing these kind of like storylines build, and maybe have a couple of the bad guys introduced here and there. But instead, it's like every rogues gallery villain that's ever existed has already been introduced in the show within a season, and is like running around in some way with another one. And it just is, it's odd. I don't get it. We're getting on a huge tangent here. Anyways, X-Men, I'm still going to keep going. I actually want to get all the way through. I don't even remember Last Stand. I remember that it was terrible, and that's about all I remember about it, but
it's too much.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. Anyway, Scott, what have you been up to?
Well, yeah, we're still in that part of the show, huh?
Yeah.
So I also watched Star Wars The Force Awakens. It was nice because my wife never had a chance to see the film when it was in the theater. So she managed to watch it with me for the first time and not be spoiled about what happens in the film.
Wow, awesome. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. So she watched it with fresh eyes, and it was exciting to sit with her and watch it and talk about
so
all
she
the...
She didn't know about any of the big
Nothing.
Twists? Or...
Nope.
How is that even possible?
I mean, she just...
It's amazing.
I guess... You know, she probably doesn't, I didn't personally see a lot of spoiler stuff on the internet anyways, as it was. People were generally pretty cool about that, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And then with, you know, spending time taking care of our son, right? So it's not like, he's not going to tell her what happens. So,
that's good of him.
Yeah. It's really cool of him to do that, you know, cause he already knows obviously what's going to happen.
Right,
so, so we watched that, and that's cool. Started watching the documentary that follows it as well. I completed Oxenfree, which is the game that I talked a little bit about last week. I will briefly say that I think that there is some broad appeal for a game like this. It's sort of an adventure game, but there's not a lot of puzzle solving. But it's really just about exploring these relationships between the characters and what happens when they all go to this island and some crazy stuff starts happening. And in sort of a very obtuse kind of way, I would say that if you enjoyed Sword and Sorcery, that there for some reason this game sort of reminds me of that, but it really doesn't, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
but there are things that you can like about both games, and you'll go, oh yeah, so, you know, in Sword and Sorcery, for example, they did a lot of great stuff with music and audio and things like that, and I think that the audio production in Oxenfree was really great. And like I mentioned before, the conversation system between the characters was really good, and I don't know, it's just a good story. It's like a movie that you can participate in, and I think it's
awesome.
Really great.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah.
For sure.
Ash, I would specifically recommend it to you because, I mean, I don't know if it's true or accurate or whatever, but there is some kind of like historical context built into the game. So I think you might be interested to see how the game tackles some of that stuff. So Oxenfree, it's on Windows 10. I think it's in the Windows 10 store and on Xbox. I don't know about other platforms, but it's a pretty solid game, and I'd recommend it if you have an afternoon to play it. Let's see. So we spent some time in the Dark Zone in the Division, and that's fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about that now or later.
I guess we can talk about it when we're talking about the Division update. So
we'll tell our
battle, our war story, because it's kind of fun.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We had good fun last night. And then have you guys looked at Miitomo yet?
No, I refuse to look at it. I'm not doing it.
Yeah. You'll see people... outlets or whatever on the internet claim that this is revolutionizing one thing or another thing, and it's not. It's just sort of it's just the gamification of social media with avatars, which are, you know, your Miis, of course. So if you're familiar with Miis on Wii U or the Wii or the 3DS, and if you've used Twitter before, this will seem very familiar to you.
When you fire up the app, do you have to put your 34 character friend code into it to find your Miitomo?
Yeah, they still make it somewhat cumbersome to find friends on this thing, because here's how you can add friends. You can add friends through connecting your social media accounts, because this app just exists to let Nintendo data mine you, you know, for in exchange for outfits for your Mii avatar.
Right.
You can use it to you can take photos of your Mii and post them to social media. So it's kind of got like a Bitmoji thing going on. Okay. And you answer questions and people come to your house. It's really just a social app. That's kind of all it is. There's clothes. You can complete these missions every day. And really the only reason that somebody who would like, this is not appealing to at all, may have any reason to use this at all, would be because along with Miitomo, Nintendo launched the sort of the new version of Club Nintendo. Club Nintendo was the loyalty program for Nintendo that existed for the past few years, and it shut down. I think it shut down last summer. And with that program, you would buy games, physical games or digital games. You get codes to, you know, you redeem the codes, you get points, use those points for physical and digital rewards. They shut that program down and relaunched it last week or a few weeks ago as My Nintendo. And so things you do in Miitomo give you coins that you can spend on rewards in My Nintendo. So that's really the only appeal if, you know, if the concept of Miitomo is not interesting to you at all. But they even kind of stripped down, in my opinion, what the rewards were from Club Nintendo. And they made it, they kind of made it harder for people to game the system to get those points in the first place. And it all seems very focused on digital now. To me, it seems more like Ubisoft's Club Ubi or whatever it's called, Uplay or whatever it is called now. So that's what My Nintendo is. And that's Miitomo. So, you know, Miitomo's cool. I feel like if you're into digital pet collecting and things like that, it's fun. I will probably use it just to get some points for My Nintendo. And sometimes it can be silly. It's almost, you guys know, Let's Quip, right? Sean Baptiste's game.
Yeah.
Let's Quip. It's almost like a G rated version of Let's Quip because the game will ask you questions and you can answer them. You can answer them seriously or not serious or whatever. And then you share your answers with other people when you interact with them, and you can go see what your friends responded as well. So you can make it funny or silly or whatever, put weird clothes on your avatar. That's pretty much it.
Huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know. That's, I think,
too,
I think
super
you're
interested.
I think your response, I think both of your responses to that is pretty much,
well, we're not the demo, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like a fun thing because a lot of our, you know, a lot of our mutual friends on Twitter are starting to use it and jump on. It's like a silly thing to do, you know, like, Mr. Slake is using it. So it's kind of funny to see him running around in there and do things like that. So, yep, that's Miitomo. So let's jump into the news.
News.
Hey, it's April, and that means that there are new games with gold for Xbox.
April fools, there's not.
What? No, but there are, though.
Oh.
There really are, yeah.
Oh, man, you just spoiled the fun.
Yeah, yeah, the fun of April fools. Finger quotes fun of April fools. Yeah, so the new Games with Gold is probably one of the best ones yet. I think I actually own all these games, unfortunately, but hey, now you can too. So the games that you're going to be getting this month on Xbox One, if you're a Gold subscriber, are The Wolf Among Us, which Matt really likes, and Sunset Overdrive, which I really like. So
I'm
that's
a big
cool.
fan of that game, so I think everyone should definitely pick it up for sure.
Yeah, play both. I mean, Sunset Overdrive was certainly my game of 2014.
Nice. Right? Has it been that long?
I think so.
I think you're, right.
Was it a launch title or was it soon after?
I think it was soon after, but you know, the things, you know, we really liked the music in the game. It was bright and colorful and fun. The female avatar voice actress was incredible in the game. I think we all, both Ash and I played as the female character. So that was super cool. And then on Xbox 360 this month for Games with Gold, we're going to get the original Dead Space, which I'm super stoked about. Yes.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for that linear narrative adventure, you know, action game, that's Dead Space right there. And Saints Row 4. And of course, I think since last November, all of the Xbox 360 games that are released with Games with Gold are going to be backwards compatible. So that means
they are. Yeah.
So worth it for Saints Row the 4. Yeah.
And you can, it's really easy on your one. You just like get it. And then it takes you to a special screen. It's like, did you want this? It's a 360 game. And you say yes. And then it downloads it and has it on your machine.
Oh yeah. The most recent update to the Xbox One also made it possible for you to shop for compatible Xbox 360 games in the store on the Xbox One, which you could not do before.
It works really well. Yep. I got Borderlands that way.
Yep. And then if the game is backward compatible and you already own it, all you need to do is go to My Games and Apps, scroll all the way over to the right, and it'll show you a list of things that you have not yet installed on your Xbox One, and your compatible 360 games will show up there as well.
Hey, Rook, only the ones that I think were digital downloads, though, right?
Yes, yeah, so you have to you have to have owned the game digitally.
But you can put... I thought you could put the disc in to get the game.
Right. So if you have a physical copy of a game that is backwards compatible, you can put that disc into your Xbox One. You just have to have the disc every time you want to play the game.
Oh, you do have to put it in every time.
So basically the disc is sort of like your license key. Because what I think it does is that you put the disc in, it goes to the server and just downloads the same bits anyways. Yeah. But that's sort of your way to authenticate your ownership of the game is with the disc. So that's cool. And I'm really excited personally for this because when they first released this feature, I downloaded Mass Effect 1 and played a little bit of it. And I noticed that the game appeared to run much like almost like faster, smoother frame rate, if you will.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah. I'm excited to go back and play a game like Dead Space, where that game even back then was incredible because they use a lot of like really visceral close up, you know, shots of the character tumbling through space and getting attacked by creatures and stuff.
Right.
I just think that that game would be even more immersive and fluid with all of the improvements that, you know, hopefully are in the playing it on the Xbox One.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great. I mean, there's a lot of really incredible games.
Yeah. And even if I know I've mentioned this before, but even if you should be getting all of these games anyhow, if you're a Game with Gold member and you don't have an Xbox One or you don't have your Xbox 360 anymore, you can just go to xbox.com, find all four of these games as long as you're in the right time frame, and then just hit buy, and they'll be associated with your account. There's no reason not to go get all these games.
Good times. Exciting stuff. So Marvel Cinematic Universe has a bunch of new updates, and it's good news. The first is big stuff about Iron Fist. We never really talked about the Iron Fist casting, but no. We'll talk about it briefly because I think it's actually pretty good news. But Finn Jones from Game of Thrones, he plays Loras Tyrell, is going to be Danny Rand. There was a little bit of controversy about this. There were a lot of people that thought that they should have gone with a lead of a different ethnicity for Danny Rand. But Danny Rand is a super white guy in the comics, so I think they just kind of wanted to adhere to the comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's a great actor. I think he's going to make a good Danny Rand. I can see him, you know, I can see him in my mind's eye with the other cast members. Like if you kind of squint and you're like, oh, I can kind of see him with Jessica Jones and with Daredevil and, you know, all those characters. So I think that's pretty cool. I think they did a good job. He's got to get in fighting shape, though, because he's going to be doing a lot of kung fu for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think it'll be good, though. I thought it was cool. The casting all seems pretty good so far. Marvel's yet to cast poorly, I feel like. So
that is true. I mean, I feel like all their casting decisions so far have been spot on. I don't think there have been any folks that I've been, you know, I've kind of shrugged at, so it's pretty awesome. And they just released that Jessica Henwick, also from Game of Thrones, she plays one of the Sand Snakes, is going to be Colleen Wing, who is a kung fu master in the Marvel world.
Yeah.
She's also going to be, looks like, in the Defenders and in Iron Fist.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty cool, too. It's freaking crazy that this stuff is happening. We're in a world where there's an Iron Fist TV series.
TV show, yeah. Oh, boy.
What is next? Like Speedball?
I'm telling you, man, it's going to be Moon Knight.
Moon Knight? I can see Moon Knight working, but it's getting to be like so ridiculous to the point where we're just getting these characters that, like, you know, the general public has no clue who the hell these people are.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go on to be massively popular. We talked about that poll that Marvel did last year. Like, you know, top five Marvel characters, and like Jessica Jones was on that list, like above Wolverine, you know. It's like, what is happening? Like, God, this character is only like, you know, what, 10 years old at this point.
It's a good time to be alive.
It's crazy. It's cool. And, you know, that's really neat. And what did you hear about this new Mutants series, Matt?
Yeah. So the new mutant, geez, hello, New Mutants movie is still being made. I guess I had totally forgotten about it. We talked about it, I think, a while ago, and then completely forgot.
Yeah, I honestly forgot all about it too.
So. Yeah, it's Josh Boone, who's the director from The Fault in Our Stars, which is actually weirdly fitting for New Mutants, like to do sort of like teen drama kind of era thing. Mm-hmm. But they just announced that Maisie Williams, yet another Game of Thrones actor, has been cast to play Wolfsbane. Who I think, did she transform into a wolf or did she control wolves? I don't remember.
She could do, well, she couldn't control wolves, but she could become like a full wolf.
And yeah.
She could, later on, she could go like halfway.
Right.
So she could become like wolf girl and then like full wolf.
Yeah. And then Sophie Turner has been cast as Jean Grey.
Oh, so they are bringing in. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Lots of Game of Thrones people all over the place. They're just getting cast and everything now. The show's ending in a year, so.
Yeah, that's true.
It's ending? Well, like they're done with it?
Seven seasons, yeah, then they're
that's
finished.
Crazy.
So wow. This is six right now, right? And then seven is it. HBO is supposedly scrambling to figure out what their next gigantic
what their next Game of Thrones
be.
Is going
to
be.
Yeah, because they don't have yeah. one right now. I yeah. think they were hoping it would be Westworld, and then that's been delayed into Lord knows when.
Yeah, that's too bad.
So
yeah, it looks like this casting is still still.
I think we're a few years off of a New Mutants movie still, right?
Yeah.
Like a year or two out. But yeah, it could be really cool. I like I said from before when I was talking about watching the X-Men movies, I still kind of weirdly, like it's weird. I have probably not really liked one since X2 and or First Class. Like those are the two that I've liked really,
right.
you know?
Yeah. Right.
But yet I still go to every single one of them in the theater. Like I'm one of the idiots that just keeps paying for this every time.
Oh, me too. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So I'll go see this one as well, I'm sure. But I like to see new directors. Like I think that's what made First Class so good was that it wasn't a Singer movie or it was like getting somebody new in, and then Days of Future Past kind of felt like a Singer movie again. So we'll see when Josh Boone does this one. Maybe it'll be interesting. Maybe it'll be a fun melodramatic tale of mutants learning their way in the world.
Yeah, let's hope so.
So also sticking with the comic book news, did you guys ever read Preacher? Did I ever force you to read Preacher?
I read a couple of issues, so I am by no means a reader. So
Preacher stands out still as probably my favorite comic book series of all time. It is written by Garth Ennis, who did Boys and a bunch of other kind of dark comics. So Jesse Custer basically is like touched by God and can like do crazy God powers. I know he talks to God in different parts, and then he is best friends with a vampire. Explaining this comic is going to make very little sense to anyone.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just written amazingly well and was one of my favorite comics of all time. And AMC picked it up to do a television series take on it. Which I think AMC can do justice to, given that that's Walking Dead as well, right?
Yeah.
Mad Men and whatever other amazing TV shows they put out. But yeah, so there's a trailer out. It's kind of our first tease of the amount of carnage that's going to happen in this show, and it is batshit crazy and looks amazing. They cast it really well, so I'm pretty excited. And it's coming out soon, May 22nd. So along with your, can you believe we live in a world where they made Iron Fist a TV show? I'm going to say... Can you believe we live in a world where they made Preacher a TV show, which is like a weird comic book series that's not even from one of the major distributors about, I think it was a Vertigo title that's about a touched by God preacher who's friends with a vampire and loses his girlfriend and goes crazy and tries to find,
you know, like iZombie is a, you know, another one like that you're just like, how is this? This is a TV show on a major network. Like
we're going to get like Chew soon or something. Like
it's going to
be crazy.
It's insane.
Good times. Let's talk a little bit about The Division, cause we've been playing it.
Okie doke. So this past week, Ubisoft did a live stream where they talked about what's coming up in their, 1.1 update, which I believe will be free to everyone.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is focused on endgame stuff, which we're not there yet, but this is still exciting nonetheless. So
yeah.
I think the main part of this update is going to be incursions, which appear to be similar to Destiny raids. So it's going to be, you know, endgame content, very difficult, challenging. In the stream, they mentioned that it's going to be important that you work together as a team. They use the word synergy about 100 times as far as like what you do. Some of the in-game footage they showed in one of the incursions showed drones flying around as enemies.
Cool.
So
that was one of the things that I said in the last episode.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was really interesting.
More variety. In the
more variety. Yeah. So the things that I took away from the stream when they were talking about incursions was that they were going to be difficult, and there are going to be, you know, drones flying around, and they're going to try to keep you from, you know, just staying in one place and looking down your scope the whole time, basically.
Yeah.
And in the footage they showed, there were like, it was like grenade spam on the enemy side. You know what I mean? Like,
oh boy,
you could not stay in one place. It was just total chaos. And then they even mentioned that they were going to give players, they didn't want to give anything away, but they wanted to give players an opportunity to fight some of the enemies without necessarily focusing on your weapons or your abilities, which makes me think that maybe they're going to add some sort of environmental interaction that you can do in order to turn the tables against the bosses.
I still think there should be, and this is totally never going to happen,
yeah,
there should be melee takedowns in Division.
Oh my God. Yeah. Especially since the guys with the bats are, you know, like unstoppable. They're invincible. Right.
There should be something.
There should be a way for you to sneak up on an enemy and, you know, click the thumbstick and do something.
I totally agree. That would be beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad. I mean, because really all you get is the melee ability, and then the guys with bats somehow have weapons that are stronger than, you know, any gun that you're carrying on you, which is ridiculous. But
you can't stagger them or anything.
It's
really, it just forces you to break out of cover and haul ass, which is stupid.
Kind of reduces you to the turret with the shock ability to stop those guys from charging you.
Yeah,
which is too bad. Something else they mentioned is that they're going to add gear sets to the game. So I think that if you complete a gear set, you get some unique talents,
which is crazy. I'm interested to see what these are.
Yeah. I am too. I think that'll be fun. They're also going to give you the ability to trade items with other players, but the way that that's going to work is that it needs to be, you can only trade items within your group, and it will be things that you found that were dropped when you're in the group. So, okay, for example, it's like, you know, you run around in a group, let's say you all fight in the dark zone, you get a weapon that you don't want, but clearly somebody else could use it, you can give them that weapon. That sort of makes sense. So it's not going to create this economy of, you know, buying and selling loot in the game. It's really just for designated for teams that are playing together, which I think is a smart idea.
Yeah. No, I think so too. And I think, you know, I like the idea of gear sets. I think that's cool. I always thought that they should be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, adding bonuses, maybe giving, and the idea that they're going to actually generate an extra ability is really neat. So,
yeah.
So I'm all for these so far.
Yeah,
what else?
Absolutely. Oh, the other thing I forgot to mention about the incursions is that there are going to be two difficulty levels. So there's going to be a hard and challenging version. The hard version is going to have a recommended gear level before you go and fight in the incursion. The challenging difficulty will have a required gear level. So they don't even want you to go into game knowing that you're going to lose because it's going to be hard.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. So obviously the challenging difficulty will drop the best loot. It almost sound the way that they talked about it made it sound like it would almost be guaranteed that you would get something if you complete it on the hardest difficulty setting, which is cool.
Wow. That's cool.
They're going to introduce a new daily mission system. So these sound like little challenges that you would complete in the game, like kill 10 cleaners or, you know, make it to here and back, like little just mini challenges that you can complete. I think there are there's like a daily mission that you can complete in the game currently when you get to level 30. I think one of the story missions sort of reopens as something that you're supposed to be able to do to get, I don't know,
better gear or
Phoenix credits or whatever it is. I think there's like some kind of like end game currencies that you need to collect to get the best stuff, but they're going to add some new daily assignments. And then one of the things that I'm most intrigued about is they're adding daily or hourly supply drops to the dark zone. So it's going to drop high level gear every hour somewhere in the area. They're going to tell you where it is. And because it comes from outside of the dark zone, it is not contaminated. And so whoever gets there first and picks it will get it.
It's going to lead to absolute chaos and pandemonium.
Can you imagine? So you're doing something, you're fighting. All of a sudden, a little beacon pops up on your screen. Supply drop incoming. You look on the map. Everybody in the dark zone runs to this area, right? Because that's
and everyone just fucking goes crazy.
And it's a free for all because there's no strategy. I mean, there is a strategy, but it's not like, oh, I'll wait for you to pick it up and I'll kill you on the way out. It's like, you then need you get to it. Get it first, period. Yeah. That'll be crazy.
That kind of segues well into a little quick story about us playing last night. And I know this is going to be riveting for our audience to hear us talk about us in depth, talking about us playing video games, but it was really cool.
I can't wait.
Well,
hey, we were all in Manhattan last night, right? Having a great time doing something.
That's right.
Yeah.
you were eating dinner in reality and we were shooting people in not reality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Probably
near each other too. Actually.
We actually probably were.
Probably.
Yeah. We were looking for you, but we couldn't find you.
Yeah.
So we ran around in the Dark Zone last night, kind of late, and just I hadn't been in the Dark Zone since the beta. And we talked about it last episode. I was kind of like, I was kind of like, not bored with the experience of the beta, but I wasn't exactly riveted by it. But holy shit, has it gotten better.
And what I thought was happening last week actually happened to us. We saw no other players, but we saw like a war zone of NPCs.
Yeah. It was crazy. So we were running around and we were kind of stuck between this war that was going on between the cleaners and the Rikers. And they were just, going at it and then we would kind of hop in and start picking them off in the middle of their firefight. And some of them would turn on us. And, there were times where Scott and I were fighting against maybe like 10, 15 enemies at a time, like running down the streets, hiding behind cars, like doing everything we could to stay alive. There was one point where we ran out of ammo.
Yeah.
And that was like the coolest thing ever. We like ran out of ammo. We're like, down to sidearms and stuff. And we like grappled up a building and like ran to the other side of the building to get away because we couldn't hold the enemies back. And it was really, really cool. And a lot of fun. And like that was kind of what I was always hoping the Dark Zone would be like. So I'm glad that they upped the number of enemies. And I also didn't really experience too much griefing when I went in there. Like, players were actually helpful. People were like getting me up and healing me. And
yeah,
it's fucking weird, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. For I had the same experience when I play by myself. People are generally cool. I only see like a couple of knuckleheads running around causing trouble, and then that's when the hordes start chasing them, and that's fun too. But like you said, it's fun to play in the Dark Zone against NPCs and against other players too, because unlike a lot of other shooting games, this is a game in which retreating is part of your tactic set,
right?
And so, like you said, at one point we were fighting at the library, where the encounter there is pretty challenging for the level that you're at. And not only were we fighting the enemies at the library, but other groups spawned around them. And at one point, yeah, we were like, hey, let's just go climb the library building, drop in on the other side of the building, and then see if we can fight our way back to the safe house. Because at that point, we were stuck between, like you said, 10 to 15 guys, which was just crazy.
Yeah.
And it was cool to do that because we weren't just trying to plow through enemies. It was just a really fun experience trying to figure out, okay, we need to maneuver because we need to get better cover. Like, I didn't have an angle on the boss, but you did. And so we kind of had to coordinate and just figure out what we needed to do. And then, of course, once you kill the guys and get the gear, then we needed to have a conversation about how we were going to get it out, and that was kind of fun too,
right? Yeah.
Just so, like,
very strategic. And I think with a group of friends, the Dark Zone has the capacity to be a whole lot of fun. I'd imagine the level 30 Dark Zone is very, very different from the level 20 Dark Zone, just because I think the level of competition is gonna be much more steep, and I think people are going to be a little bit more aggressive for loot, yes, because that's the only reason they're there.
Right.
But I would say, definitely if you're on the fence about the Division, obviously it sold really well. So there's not a lot of people that are totally on the fence about it. But if you're on the fence about it at all, and you're looking for a different sort of PvE experience with your buddies, I definitely say go for it. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah. And this piece is going to be free, right? The first update.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So I guess it's coming very soon. Did they say when this update's actually dropping?
It looks like April 12th is it's coming.
April 12th. So yeah, week after this.
Apparently in the incursions, also no checkpoints.
Oh, yeah, man.
So good luck with that.
Do that. We should stream that.
Yeah, we should. It'll just be us dying like right at the door, like
probably,
over and over.
Probably.
It'll be great. Excellent. All right, cool. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll talk a little Star Wars, and then we'll jump into Ardna Quadro.
are here and we are going to be talking about a little bit about the Star Wars Episode 7 bonus content in our review section. And, you know, we're not going to spoil too much. We're not going to review too much. But there is some really cool stuff in there that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Did you guys actually at least get through part of the documentary?
I've watched a little more than half.
Nice. I'm less than that.
I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's super polished. You get to kind of see the thing that I found to be the most exciting was watching the casting process. You get to see the casting for Rey and Finn and for Poe Dameron. And holy cow, I think they said that John Boyega had to audition 9 times.
Yeah.
9 times for that role. And he was such a huge Star Wars fan that he just kind of kept coming back and practicing. And the thing that's crazy to me is that, in real life, he has a really thick British accent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really thick. Like, and my wife didn't even really know that he was British until I brought it up. And, he just does such a great job as Finn, and you don't hear that accent at all. And I think, the casting of the film is just amazing. And they also drop a little bit of info. This isn't really a spoiler because it's just about casting crap, but the fact that Poe was going to die in the original draft, and Oscar Isaac actually went to J.J. Abrams and he's like, man, I die in every movie that I'm in. And he's like, can we J.J. Abrams ends up really liking Oscar Isaac so much that he ends up changing the role of Poe.
I couldn't even imagine the movie without him in it for the last 2/3 of the film.
Right. And I wonder in which section he was going to die, but he was supposed to definitely die. He was supposed to be a big, sacrifice in the movie, and wasn't going to be in the rest of the trilogy. And now he is, because, he had the balls to kind of talk to J.J. Abrams and be like, I kind of want to live.
It's exciting too. I think the thing that makes the casting so important is that you're not just casting a film. You also need to cast people that are going to be ambassadors to Star Wars,
Right.
So you can't just, obviously you want the person to be a great actor and, good on screen and do all the things you need them to do, but you also need them to be like cool on social media as well and not do something that's going to reflect poorly on the franchise or not freak out after a few years and be like, oh, I'm sick of this crap or whatever, because that happens with James Bond films that, at a certain point, Daniel Craig goes like, all right, I'm tired of this or whatever.
I'm tired of being
and, you need people like John Boyega who are just going to be super pumped about the whole thing all the way through. And I think, seeing his enthusiasm, it's contagious.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, right now it has gone viral already. So most of our listeners have probably seen it, but there's a clip of Daisy Ridley's casting tape that's online.
Yeah.
And they have a longer version of that in the documentary. And it's the scene where she is getting her mind read by Kylo Ren in the torture chair.
Mm-hmm.
And holy shit, Daisy Ridley just like whips out.
It's like, intense.
Yeah. I mean, she just like, and that was the scene, they talked to J.J. Abrams in the documentary and he's like, we kind of knew right there that was going to be it. This was the girl, because like her, just her in that one scene, it's unbelievable to see her level of talent. And she's never done like a big movie before.
Yeah.
And so they show her first scene, filming her first scene, which is the scene, out she's in the like desert where she's polishing something. Right. Yeah. And she was talking in the documentary, how nervous she was because she was doing that wrong. And it shows J.J. Abrams like showing her like, how she's supposed to be polishing this artifact. But it's just really cool to see the creative process and to see, everybody together, making this movie, which I think turned out pretty damn good. So
yeah.
the other features, they have some stuff on special effects. They have
the special effects featurette is good.
Yeah,
it's really, really good. Watching those guys make things is incredible. Like they like both practical and CG it's unbelievable. But yeah, so watch that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a little clip. I was hoping when I first saw this was a feature. It was the table read of the movie for the first time.
Yes.
Oh, really?
I was thinking it was going to be the whole table read.
Oh,
geez. It's like 3 minutes, which really bummed me out. I was like, oh man, I would love to see the full table read.
Mm-hmm.
But they, of course, didn't give us that.
Right, that's right.
For their eyes only. But the thing that was neat about that is Mark Hamill does all the direction. So he's like reading all the scenes and everything. So you get to see a little bit of that, which is also, pretty damn incredible to see them basically reading it together for the first time.
Like, yeah.
You know, none of the cast had read the movie, so they're sitting down to read it all at the same time as a group.
All those people were in the same room at the same time, right, which was a big deal for them too.
Yeah.
I think the thing, you know, watching the piece of documentary that I saw, what I found to be most interesting is how much they focused on sort of the legacy aspect of it. You know, that they're like, this is a franchise. This is a, you know, a cultural movement that is now being passed on to a new generation. And it was cool because in a part of the documentary, they go to Pinewood and they start building sets and talking about art direction, all this other stuff. And they go, yeah, there were people that work here now whose parents worked on stuff for the original Star Wars.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, now their kids are here. They've been working here for 20, 30 years, and now they get to work on Star Wars too. And I just thought that like that aspect of it was really awesome to think about. You know, hey, my mom, my dad, they were here. They built Millennium Falcon. Now I'm here. I'm building the Falcon again. Looking at things that they designed and drafted up. Like I think that's really exciting to see stuff like that.
Yeah, there was a neat thing that our listeners will probably like, but the R2 that was in Force Awakens was actually built by a fan group who ran into Kathleen Kennedy like a decade ago, and he like jokingly said, well, if you ever need another R2 for an upcoming movie, he's like, you know, we've got a lot of builders. And I guess she took his fucking card and called him. It's like, yeah, you want to build us an R2 for Force Awakens?
Yes.
And so these guys showed up, like, you know, from the Droid Builders Club, and were on set every day controlling and, you know, some of the droids, which is just like so cool. And like, you know, just watching the whole process as a fan of it, it's like you could very, very much tell that everybody involved care a lot.
Yep.
And that's why it is what it is, and not, you know, not something terrible.
Yeah. It was nice that the droid builder guys, like, they were also very humble, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
they absolutely weren't like, they knew it. They didn't have like a big head about being there. They were like, we understand that what we get to do is a big deal, and we are fans, and we appreciate this, and we want to do this right. And you're like, oh, cool. That's exactly what we want to see. You know, really, it's great to hear.
So, definitely, you know, if you were on the fence about picking up, either a digital copy or the Blu-ray copy of, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and you want to see, I want to say there's a couple hours worth of bonus content.
I think it's about two hours of bonus content. Yeah.
It's definitely worth it. You know, I plowed through all of it and it just made me like the movie even that much more. So check it out. And I think the Blu-ray comes out on Tuesday.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Which is crazy.
Awesome.
It's time for the nerd appropriate question of the week.
Yeah. This one was born out of me trying on the Oculus and having to stand on a very tall building.
Okay.
Terrified. And the question this week is, what is your worst fear and would you subject yourself to it in virtual reality? Most of the people just said, fuck no.
Yeah.
Because why? But, the first answer is from Andrew Baker, a Baker N7. He says, my worst fear is being naked in public, and I'm not sure how that would work in VR, but I probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I love that answer.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Being naked in public?
Yeah, I can imagine that the scenario would be like somehow you standing in front of the mirror and the mirror would be reflecting somehow your image with technology or something like that. It'd be really freaky.
Just imagine like the Division, like a downtown Manhattan in VR. Yeah. And then you have the goggles on and when you look down, everything's naked and you're just running through the city. Ooh. And everyone's pointing at you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty terrifying.
Chris Jenkins at Claw Glip says, 1, Gremlins. 2, fuck no.
How can he be afraid of Gremlins?
Yeah, that's a specifically weird fear.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Haggis McHaggis at Haggis McHaggis says, my worst fear is kind of hard to simulate in VR and involves being stranded without my meds and no way to get replacements.
Ooh, that's rough.
Yeah.
That's really rough. We will not joke of that. I was trying to think of something like witty or punny to say, and I'm like, that's just horrible and cruel to even like make a joke. So yes, that's a terrible fear, and hopefully that never happens. What about you guys? What about Scott? Do you have one?
Let's see. I guess my worst fear would be, I'm not claustrophobic, but my fear is being trapped. So that it's kind of claustrophobic, but it's not. So
trapped,
I'm not
inside anything in particular.
Yeah. Well, I'm not afraid of being in enclosed spaces, but anytime I'm in a situation where I feel as if I cannot freely get out of that situation of my own, you know, at a time of my own choosing, then I get anxious.
Right.
So I don't know that I would want to do that in VR. I don't know how you would do that. And I also feel like I just wouldn't like it. I still would not like it equally as I do now.
I was at a concert once, a long time ago, and it was so crowded that the concert, people started jumping up and down.
Yeah.
And my arms were pinned at my sides and I was being lifted up and down and couldn't move.
Yes.
And that was the only time I think that I've experienced that feeling where I was just like, get me the fuck out of here. Like, I want to like be able to breathe and move my arms. Like, I couldn't. It was like totally out of control of my own body, which was terrifying.
Yeah. That happened to me once too. I was actually, this is the only time I've ever done this. I was close to the front of the stage. And that same thing happened to me, and I actually asked to be pulled out. Like, I had the security guys, you know, like pull me out.
That was so at the Spin Doctors, right?
Yeah, it was totally at the Spin Doctors. It was, I think it was at a Vanessa Carlton concert. You know, the crowd was just so rowdy that I was just like, you got to get me out of here, man. There's just too many white girls here, man. They're just way too excited about Vanessa Carlton.
Get me
Scott
out of
was
here.
Just trying to get 1 foot closer to Vanessa Carlton. That's all that was.
Such a random reference. Why do I? Everyone's gonna be like, who what is she doing anymore? Like, does she still live in Nolita? Do you still see her? Do you see her in town at all?
Me?
Yeah.
I've never seen her in town. Is she still married to what's his name?
Didn't
she marry the guy from Third Eye Blind?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if they're still together. I don't know.
I thought they lived in San Francisco last time. Okay. I stalked them.
Anyways.
Okay.
That's random.
Whose turn is it? Is it mine?
Yours.
Yeah, it's yours. All right.
Carlo, Platinum Fist. Hey, buddy. He says, pretty sure I wouldn't try a deep sea dive or a space sim with accompanying oxygen deprivation mask, next level VR. Ooh. Yeah, that would be totally scary. One that would actually cut off your oxygen supply if you started losing oxygen.
Oh, geez. That's like next level VR. That's fully immersive.
Yeah.
Bethany. Hey, Bethany. At HemiArt says, I don't know. I guess if someone could figure out how to turn an existential crisis into a video game, I'd give it a shot.
I have existential crises all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody will make that experience.
Yeah,
for sure. Do you guys have an answer? Matt, do you have an answer to this question?
I have so many fears, guys.
Oh, well, you'll have to pick one at least.
Shellfish allergy VR.
Yeah, right? That's weirdly like the one thing I'm not afraid of is the thing that could actually kill me, which is weird, right?
Yeah.
That seems weird. Anyways, I have two. One I've dealt with, and I think it got heightened after I dealt with it in real life, and I would not want to deal with this in VR either, which is spiders. I have a weird spider fear. Got bit by one really bad once on tour, and that was no fun. But I would not do VR like covered in spiders or something. That would beyond freak me out. And my other one is sort of the opposite of Scott's, which is I actually am claustrophobic, and I didn't really know this. I always was weirded out by like enclosed spaces, but
did you figure this out really at IKEA?
I had a panic attack at IKEA.
Oh, I thought that was when you figured it out. Yeah.
No, I think that's when I sort of started noticing that I was weirded out by things like this. I think I figured it out when I got an MRI and had to close my eyes and pretend that I was somewhere else entirely for fear of like absolutely freaking out inside of that machine. Cause it was the embodiment of the most horrific thing I could do with claustrophobia. That, cause if you've never gotten one, that you start out completely open and then you basically slowly descend into this tube that is slowly getting smaller as you go into it, to the point where eventually it's just completely surrounding your body and you kind of can't really move to get out of it. Like, you're just stuck there. And then depending on what you're getting an MRI of, mine was the shoulder. My arm is like actually like weirdly held in place. So you can't move your arm.
It's very uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable and was super terrifying for me. I literally closed my eyes and just sat there.
Did they give you any advice before you went into it?
I told her that I sometimes get weirded out by small spaces. Yeah. And she's like, we'll make this as quick as possible. Oh. You know, you'll have music playing. I had like headphones to play music because I think they think everyone's going to freak out from the sound because it is really, it's weird sound. But.
Oh, really? They told me the opposite. She told me, you know, when I had mine done, they just said, find the beat.
Are you guys okay getting MRIs all the time?
Yeah.
Is everything all right?
I think we got them for the same reason. I started my hand. It's from working at a desk.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, my hand started going numb, like, for no reason. And then I went to the doctor, and they were like, oh, you probably have a pinched nerve or something. You go get an MRI. And turned out I don't.
Yeah, the advice they gave me was, maybe it wasn't the nurse, but someone just told me, find the beat. And so when you're in an MRI machine, it's like kind of like, and I just kind of, like, tuned into the rhythm of the machine and kind of zoned out. And that's how I was able to get through it.
That noise is going to be the worst noise. And then like it'll be like, boop, boop. And you're like, well, that's a loud, weird noise. And then it's like, gung, 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 gung. You're like, yeah. Oh, that's a weird, loud noise. And then it's just like static for a little while. Like the noises keep changing and getting weirder as
like
they go.
Skinny puppy or something.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this?
Yeah, it would make a great soundtrack to like a 70s sci-fi film.
Yeah. I did essentially the same thing. I just closed my eyes and like pretended I was anywhere else in the world at that moment. So that is mine. And I would also not fucking do it in VR, but I also don't need to. I'm pretty aware that I'm afraid of it. Unless it somehow was like
therapy.
Yeah, it was like a therapy to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they were like, you're going to start off being in the worst situation and then we're going to make it better. And like, then you'll be okay with it eventually. Like then I might think about it, but no. Finally, the last guy, Joel at Cliffy Joel, says, my worst fear is that the world will end before Mass Effect Andromeda is released and I'll never get to play it. So no.
Jeez.
I'm excited to play it.
I am too. I'm ready. I'm ready for some Andromeda action. It'll be fun.
It's like it's like full circle for this podcast, is that we'll be talking about Mass Effect again.
I know. Well, we'll see.
Yep.
We'll see when it comes out.
Absolutely. So well, I think that's it. We did it, guys. Thank you to everybody that answered. And you know, obviously we're not giving out Miitomo coins for answers, but we appreciate it nonetheless.
We do. Thank you guys very much. And thank you for listening to episode 228 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can go to our YouTube page, and that's /NerdAppropriate. You have a lot of old interviews and fun stuff up there for you to check out. You can message us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. Did I ever say that? I did. And you can go to, of course, Facebook/NerdAppropriate. And we haven't said it in a while, but our music is, our intro is done by Mr. Jimmy Hinson at Big Giant Circle. So definitely check him out.
Yeah, he just released a new album just this past week. So check out his Bandcamp.
Yeah, definitely check it out. He's a very talented and dashing gentleman, so give him a follow. Check out his Bandcamp, Big Giant Circles, and we of course are always grateful for the music he has provided to our show.
Mm-hmm. So, it's true.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week with all new stuff. See you guys later.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Uh